Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 26th of November 2024. My name is Guy and I have compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Elizabeth Dale and Di Shaw and recorded at home by Elizabeth Dale and Rosemary Shergold. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:42 a.m. and sunset is at 4:01 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on November the 26th in history. In 43 BC, the Second Triumvirate Alliance of Roman leader Octavian, later Caesar Augustus, Marcus Aemilius Lepidus and Mark Antony was formed to avenge the assassination of Julius Caesar. In 1476, Vlad III Dracula, commonly known as Vlad the Impaler, defeated an Ottoman army led by Bazara Laiota. Vlad had support from a number of European dignitaries, including Stephen the Great of Moldavia, and he became the ruler of Wallachia for the third time. In 1922, English archaeologist Howard Carter first made a tiny breach in the doorway to Pharaoh Tutankhamun's virtually intact tomb in Egypt. Carter was accompanied in this moment by Lord Carnarvon, the sponsor of the excavation, Lady Evelyn Herbert, Carnarvon's daughter, and his assistant Arthur Callender. In 1942, Casablanca, directed by Michael Curtiz and starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, premiered at the Hollywood Theatre in New York. The film won the Academy Award for the Best Picture in 1943. Born on this day, in 1907, Henry Hot Lips Levine, British-American Dixieland jazz trumpeter and bandleader, was born in London. In 1922, Charles M. Schulz, American cartoonist famous for the Peanuts cartoon strip, was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In 1923, Patricia Pat Phoenix, British actress most famous for her portrayal of Elsie Tanner in Coronation Street, was born in Fallowfield, Manchester. In 1939, Tina Turner, American singer, was born in Nutbush, Tennessee. Turner, known as the Queen of Rock and Roll, rose to prominence as the lead singer of the husband and wife duo Ike and Tina Turner, before launching a successful career as a solo performer. And deaths on this day. In 1504, Isabella I of Castile, Queen of Castile. She was patron of Christopher Columbus and initiated the Spanish Inquisition with husband Ferdinand II of Aragon. She died aged 53. In 1940, Harold Sidney Harmsworth, 1st Viscount Rothermere, English newspaper proprietor and owner of Associated Newspapers Limited, died in Bermuda, aged 72. He is best known, like his brother Alfred Harmsworth, later Viscount Northcliffe, for the development of the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror. In 1956, Tommy Dorsey, American trombonist, composer, conductor and bandleader of the Big Band era, died aged 51. In 1996, Michael Benteen, CBE, British comedian, comic actor and founding member of the Goons, died aged 74. Shortly before his death from prostate cancer, he was visited in hospital by Prince Charles, who was a close personal friend. Now on to the news for this week. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles.
A booking system is set to be introduced for Oxfordshire's 7 household waste recycling centres. Currently, people can visit the sites during opening hours without pre-booking. However, Oxfordshire County Council plans to extend a booking system already in place for residents wanting to dispose of small quantities of DIY waste to all users. Councillor Pete Sudbury, Deputy Leader of Oxfordshire County Council, with responsibility for climate change, environment and future generations, approved the measure on Thursday the 14th of November at his cabinet members' decision meeting. He said, "Our residents have helped Oxfordshire top the national recycling, reusing and composting table for 10 years in a row, so we know they are committed to reducing waste. We are confident that they will see the benefits of this new system, which will help them avoid long queues by booking a time slot in advance and lead to better customer service from our household waste recycling centre employees." According to the council, a booking system will improve traffic management, reduce queues and boost recycling rates, as staff will be able to assist visitors in separating their recyclable from their non-recyclable waste. It will also allow for more targeted communication with customers about their scheduled visit.
There are two types of people: those who have already joined the Air Fryer Appreciation Society and those who absolutely haven't. Chef Gino De Campo is firmly in the first camp. He's got three at home, a whole range of Gino-branded ones in Asda, and now a cookbook dedicated to them. You'd think it would be a risky business, taking revered Italian recipes laden with history and the hearts of 1,000 nonnas and shoving them in the hot drawer of a kitchen gadget. But De Campo believes it's a giant oven resting on its fuel-guzzling laurels in your kitchen that's most at risk. "The oven should be worried," says the 48-year-old. "Probably not in the next 4 to 5 years, but in the next 10. When air fryers save space, electricity and time, why fight change? You can take it with you if you go camping, if you go in your garden," says De Campo. An air fryer and an oven, they are 99% doing exactly the same thing. The only difference is the air fryer is portable. Hence why he has little time for the naysayers and willing to cheat on their oven on principle. If you're talking on principle, then a lot of people are against many things for no reason whatsoever. An air fryer is just the same principle as the oven, says De Campo. It shouldn't be called an air fryer. It's very clever made-up marketing word. It should be called a mini oven, an oven that has a fan and a heating element. The air fryer has a fan and a heating element. That said, he's done the research and reckons only around 50% of Italian food will work in an air fryer. It would be silly to say you can do every Italian recipe in an air fryer. Absolute rubbish, he yelps down the phone. If you want to do a spaghetti carbonara, how are you going to do that? Impossible. There is really no substitute for spaghetti cooked in boiling water as salty as the sea, but lasagna. Bung it in the air fryer. Aubergine parmigiana, cannelloni with spinach and ricotta, polenta chips, whole sea bream with lemon, panettone pudding. Switch that gadget on. Every time he does, De Campo thinks of his late mother, Alba. "My mother was one of those women that used to cook and clean at the same time. And in the last 10 years of her life, she lived by herself. She was always complaining that whenever she put the oven on, it would be, 'Too much electricity I'm spending,' or 'The oven is getting dirty,' he remembers. 'When the air fryer came into my hand during COVID, I thought, my mama would love this. It's perfect for one or two people, and she would have cleaned less. I know she would love it.'" Born in Naples, De Campo splits his time between Italy and England, and as a dad of three, family is central to his food. His new book is Gino's Air Fryer Cookbook, Italian Classics Made Easy.
Oxfordshire is braced for a harsh winter of discontent, with the NHS warning that services are facing severe strain and ambulance crews already struggling with delays. South Central Ambulance Service, which covers the county, has said workers are experiencing earlier than usual winter pressures, with flu and COVID symptoms having a widespread impact. It comes as a yellow cold health alert was issued for Oxfordshire by the UK Health Security Agency, which means forecast weather will create additional pressures for health and social care services. The ambulance service said it was aware that this winter would be challenging, especially as the NHS as a whole is busier than ever going into winter. Over the last few weeks, It has seen periods where ambulance crews were delayed in handing over patients at A&E, which then puts pressure on the ambulance service. The service said this was because some patients with less serious emergencies were having to wait longer for ambulances to reach them. We are seeing earlier than usual winter pressures on hospitals, said a spokesperson for the ambulance service. The target time we have for reaching such patients is within 2 or 3 hours. But there have been periods over the last few weeks when some patients have waited considerably longer. We continue to work with our partners in local health services to improve the flow of patients in hospital A&E departments. Age UK Oxfordshire says it was very aware that Oxfordshire's hospitals were busier than normal as bosses raised concerns about the impact of more vulnerable elderly people. CEO of Age UK Oxfordshire, Paul Ringer, said, "As winter approaches, we are particularly concerned about the well-being of older adults in Oxfordshire. The cold weather can exacerbate existing health conditions and increase the risk of hypothermia and falls. There is always a concern that services might struggle to cope, especially with the added challenge of severe weather. We urge everyone to check on older neighbours and family members and to support local services in any way they can. With snow expected in the future, we anticipate a rise in pressures on health services, and it's vital that all remain vigilant and proactive in our support efforts. To cope with the demands, SCAS, the ambulance service, has a sophisticated forecast system that models its expected 999 demand using data from previous years and taking into account any other external factors, such as the weather. SCAS said it's therefore confident it has sufficient planned resources in place to cope with the cold weather alert over the next few days. Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, said there needed to be real improvements to health services. NHS staff work tirelessly all year round, always putting patients first, he said. However, their ability to provide the care we need is often undermined by a lack of resources, and this is particularly severe in the winter. I have consistently campaigned for greater investment in our local health services. I welcome the Chancellor's recent commitments in the budget, but we need to see real improvements, like being able to see a GP or dentist when we need to. As snow and cold weather increase demand on our NHS, it's crucial no one hesitates to seek help when they need it. The NHS is here for us. Let's ensure it has the support to be there when it matters most. Ollie Glover, Liberal Democrat MP for Didcot and Wantage, said he was concerned about health services being overstretched as we head into the colder months. He said, "At the budget, we called for a new fund to build resilience in the NHS and protect our services, and therefore those who are vulnerable when the cold health alerts are announced. Locally, I have continued to work with others to see plans for the new GP surgery at Didcot's Great Western Park are fulfilled." Oxford University Hospitals said it was working hard with its health and social care partners to tackle winter pressures and make sure people get the right care in the right place at the right time. "We have worked collaboratively over the last few years and have been learning each time how we can best manage the additional pressures the colder months can bring," said a spokesperson. As we approach the winter, Oxfordshire's leading bus and coach operators are rolling out a free winter flu jab programme for its colleagues to help them guard against seasonal colds and flu. The jab is available for free for everyone at Oxford Bus Company, Thames Travel and Pullums. The complimentary vaccine is optional for all employees across the three companies and is being administered by a nurse in Oxford Bus Company's Occupational Health Department. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Group, said, "The health and well-being of our colleagues is a key priority for us, so we have invested in offering seasonal flu vaccinations. Flu jabs are only available to certain groups via the NHS, and so this ensures that any of our colleagues who would like to be vaccinated this winter can be for free. The initiative will help keep our workforce well, ensuring we can deliver an excellent service this winter and that our colleagues can enjoy the festive period during their downtime. A spokesperson for Oxford University Hospitals added, "People can help us by making sure they are using the right healthcare services for their needs. A&E should be kept for genuine emergencies. If you need urgent but not emergency help, contact NHS 111, who can point you in the right direction, or see if services like your local pharmacy can help."
Oxford United has given its support to a Blackbird Leeds charity, which helps people to lead healthy lifestyles, learn new skills and connect with like-minded individuals. Leeds Community Development Initiative, CDI, has received a £1,000 donation from a fund associated with the club's Dreaming Spires project. The project is designed to deliver significant impact across the county through supportive activities as part of United's new stadium plans. Leeds CDI, founded in 1995, works to improve social inclusion and address deprivation. The charity works with children aged 9 to 17 and those aged 50 and older, delivering more than a dozen weekly sessions, including yoga, gardening, singing, arts and crafts, tai chi and gaming. The donation will be used to fund the charity's after-school programmes and provide food for sessions, which engage more than 550 people each year. Kirk Wheeler, charity manager at Leeds CDI, said, "Our work is centred around providing opportunities to people who otherwise would be at risk of becoming isolated or simply not reaching their potential. There is an outstanding feeling of community at all our sessions, which help bring out the best of people and connect with those of varying ages, experiences and skill sets who find common ground through our delivery. Funding received from Oxford United will make an important difference to our youth programmes and ensure we can continue to provide food free of charge at selected events. We are incredibly grateful for the club's support, and I know our appreciation extends to participants, many of whom are big Oxford United fans." Leeds CDI is one of 10 Oxfordshire-based not-for-profit organisations that support the provision of sport and physical activity, as well as health and well-being programmes, selected by a judging panel to receive a £1,000 grant from the club. The successful applicants demonstrated how the funding would help them to make improvements and deliver more impact in their communities.
The Oxfordshire spot to avoid should a nuclear war break out has been revealed. A new video on social media has identified the key spots across the UK where nuclear bombs would most likely be dropped, and one area is within our county. The viral clip was posted by GeoDiscovery on TikTok and has garnered as many as 38,000 likes and 3,000 comments. If a nuclear war breaks out between the United Kingdom and Russia, and you don't want to see God so soon, then stay away from these places, begins the video. It then goes on to identify several spots where nuclear warfare would likely break out, including London and Scotland's Faslane, which is home to the UK's nuclear submarines. Also mentioned in the list, along with RAF Fylingdales in North Yorkshire and RAF Menwith Hill Base near Harrogate, is Oxfordshire's RAF Brize Norton, located close to Carterton. Lastly, avoid the area around RAF Brize Norton in Oxfordshire, which is the largest station of the RAF and a key air transport hub. Damaging this would disrupt the UK's ability to conduct air operations effectively. The station is the base for air transport, air-to-air refuelling and military parachuting, with the Boeing C-17 Globemaster III, Airbus A400M Atlas and Airbus Voyager operating from the station. Following the closure of RAF Lynham in 2012, Brize Norton is the sole air point of embarkation for British troops.
A man has created the ultimate Narnia-themed treehouse next to C.S. Lewis's home, and even featuring a magic wardrobe door. The treehouse is inspired by The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and it is just two doors down from where the author lived. The property in Headington features rooms inspired by the Beaver's Den and a Mr. Tumnus cave from the Narnia books. It also has a magic wardrobe from the first book in the series that transports people to the countryside. The lights are switched on by placing the One Ring next to a copy of The Lord of the Rings as a nod to Mr. Lewis' old drinking buddy J.A.R. Tolkien. There is also a magic mirror people can talk to, built with generative AI which speaks as if it is the White Queen and only responds in verse. Dr. Yaz Ramahi is the man behind this creation, and he explained how people are easily transported back to their childhood. The engineer said, "The adults feel like they are reliving their childhood and their children are enjoying their space, and that obviously gives us the satisfaction." The treehouse was created 6 years ago to hold sessions, events and entertain children as part of the Congenital Anemia Network, a charity focusing on children and families with inherited anemias such as sickle cell anemia. The charity was founded by his partner, Dr. Naomi Roy, who works as a consultant haematologist at Oxford University's Hospitals NHS Trust. Dr. Ramahi said, "It can feel quite lonely. At these events, children can make friends who are going through the same things. Also to the family, for parents to get to know each other, it gives them the confidence they need to manage it. The charity has grown in popularity and we have patients from all over the country who come to the events we host." Seeing potential in the property, Dr. Ramahi, who is a Narnia fan, decided to make the property available to rent. He said, "C.S. Lewis's old house and garden is actually two doors down, so we share the same woodland. It's an homage to C.S. Lewis and the Narnia series, and we integrated the theme. I'm a member of the Magic Circle, and I am an engineer, so I built all the magic props. The kids loved the fantasy, so it was a labour of love."
A survey has been carried out to protect wildlife, including badgers and bats, at a major road scheme. Early this year, archaeologists made a series of historic discoveries at the A34 Lodge Hill Junction near Abingdon. Now, as part of the project to provide new slip roads, detailed ecological surveys have been conducted to assess the impact of the roadworks on local wildlife. Abingdon North County Councillor Nathan Lee says badger surveys have identified lots of badger sets in woodland near the junction. Mr. Lee said in a public statement, "To ensure compliance with the Protection of Badgers Act 1992, exclusion zones will be set up around active sets with one-way badger gates where necessary. These gates will be monitored to confirm badger relocation before vegetation clearance. Additionally, all construction near sets will follow seasonal restrictions to avoid disruption during the breeding season, February to June. Efforts are also being made to protect bats, birds and great crested newts. Four trees have been identified as potential roosting locations for bats, and they will be replaced by boxes installed by the Bat Conservation Trust. A total of 53 bird species were observed, with 16 listed as species of conservation concern, such as skylarks and song thrushes. Vegetation removal will be restricted to the September to February window outside the nesting season. Archaeologists made discoveries which pointed to prehistoric human activity in the area. Flints were recovered, hinting at prehistoric occupation of the landscape, possibly during the Neolithic to Bronze Age periods. A fragment of a lower to middle Paleolithic hand axe was also discovered, showing minimal signs of wear. Oxfordshire County Council and contractors Balfour Beatty started work this summer to create the major improvements for drivers. The junction at Lodge Hill currently only has north-facing slip roads, but the scheme will add new south-facing slip roads, as well as making cycling and walking easier and safer in the area. Adding the south-facing slip roads will remove traffic from the town centre as some drivers will no longer have to travel through it to access the A34 southbound at the Marcham interchange. The County Council has entered into a grant funding agreement with Homes England to secure £17.3 million of infrastructure funding for the scheme, and major construction work is expected to start in the new year. Matt Parks, Project Director at Balfour Beatty, said, "We're pleased to be working alongside Oxfordshire County Council to bring the A34 Lodge Hill interchange scheme to life. This important transport infrastructure project will support regional economic growth and on completion will significantly improve connectivity and accessibility for local residents and the travelling public alike."
A spectacular covered ice rink is one of the new attractions featuring at this year's Christmas at Blenheim Palace. For the first time, experienced skaters or first-timers can glide across the ice against the iconic background of the palace at the Great Skate, set in the Great Court. Inside the palace is the world of Neverland, based on J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan, and created with Great Ormond Street Hospital charity. The state rooms have been transformed into scenes from the story, following Tinkerbell as she sprinkles fairy dust over Christmas trees and baubles, and featuring an iconic London skyline and mermaid lagoon. Outdoors, the illuminated trail features a series of brand new light artworks. The magical After Dark Trail will lead visitors through the gardens filled with glowing baubles, colourful trees and featuring over a million twinkling lights. Matthew Findlay, head of UK Trails for Sony Music, said, "We are thrilled to bring back Christmas at Blenheim for 2024 with incredible new artistic innovations. Meanwhile, the traditional Christmas market, with wooden chalets offering artisan gifts, festive treats and seasonal food and drink, opened on Friday, November the 15th.
Oxfordshire farmers have condemned changes to inheritance tax and joined protests at home and in London recently. A farmers' rally in the capital attracted support from an estimated 20,000 people who joined the rally following a mass lobby of MPs by the National Farmers Union. The protests were sparked over Labour's decision to cap relief for inheritance tax at the first £1 million for farms, reversing a policy designed to ease the financial burdens on family farmers. Former Witney MP Robert Courts was among those joining the Oxfordshire farmers in attendance with Jeremy Clarkson, leading two coachloads of people from his Diddley Squat farm in Chadlington. Mr. Courts said, "Farmers are the very essence of rural life and economy, out in all weathers to provide us with food. The family farm tax is a disaster for rural communities and the UK's food security." NFU President Tom Bradshaw described the tax as abhorrent and said, "We think it's a very ill-considered policy. I don't think they understand that family farms are producing this country's food and are right in the eye of this storm." Thousands more joined the rally on the streets following the lobby, including Oxfordshire Conservative County Councillor Liam Walker. He said, "It really was a great honour to stand shoulder to shoulder with farmers from across the country today in London. Today we brought the countryside to the city and showed this government why they should U-turn on this ridiculous family farm tax policy. We owe it to this farming generation and the next to ensure there's a future of local farming in Oxfordshire and across the country." More than 1,000 Oxfordshire constituents have also written to their MPs in the South East to protest the anti-rural measures to put pressure on the Treasury to change course and put life back into the rural economy. The action comes after Labour's first autumn budget introduced a cap on agricultural property relief and business property relief, meaning that farmers will only pay no inheritance tax on the first £1 million of combined property. After that, they will pay a reduced rate of 20% compared to the standard 40% inheritance tax, which can be paid in instalments over 10 years interest-free. The relief was originally imposed in 1992 because farming is often not a lucrative business and keeping the farm within the family increases food security. Environment Secretary Steve Reed said that the government has allocated sustainable investment and flooding relief funding to farmers, among other measures.
A professor has blasted impoverished millionaires who claimed a need for more support, following Rachel Reeves' plans to impose a levy on business and agricultural assets worth more than £1 million. Jeremy Clarkson, whose Diddley Squat Farm is based in Chadlington, and Sir James Dyson have been among the most vocal multimillionaires to slam the Chancellor's proposals. The Treasury has said that roughly three quarters of farms, 73%, would not be impacted by the tax change. However, this has not stopped a backlash. Mr. Clarkson says the budget makes farming nigh on impossible and believes it's part of a sinister plan to carpet bomb our farmland. Writing in The Sun, he said, it will be okay for the Labour Party as they will be living on a diet of quinoa. Now, Paul Cheshire, Emeritus Professor of Economic Geography at the London School of Economics, has hit back. He told London Economic, the inheritance tax loophole on farmland introduced in 1984 simply pushed up the price of land without improving returns to active farmers. This is because, like most agricultural subsidies, the value of the relief was capitalised into land values.
The first electric food waste collection vehicle has been delivered to two district councils in South Oxfordshire as part of their ambition to decarbonise their fleet of waste vehicles and meet net zero targets. South Oxfordshire and Vale of the White Horse district councils hope to save more than 20 tonnes of carbon dioxide a year with the addition of the new electric vehicle. The vehicle was delivered to the councils at the Cullum depot of their waste contractor, Biffa, earlier this autumn. It is being used throughout both district council areas as part of the fleet of 12 food waste collection trucks. The diesel food waste trucks each cover approximately 26,000 miles a year, which, with an average load, would produce 30.9 tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent. Mark Coleman, Cabinet Member for Environmental Services and Waste at Vale of White Horse District Council, said, "It's a great day for us to take delivery of the first EV in our fleet of waste vehicles. Our aim is that when the time comes to replace each of our food waste trucks, then EVs will be the first choice in terms of what they deliver for the public. It's our proud ambition to provide a reliable and robust waste collection service for our residents and cut council carbon emissions at the same time." Sam James Laurie, Cabinet Member for the Environment at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "We're delighted to reduce greenhouse gases, both for our councils and for the districts, with the purchase of this new EV, following a very successful trial in the districts of a similar vehicle to a year ago. When considered over its whole life cycle, taking into account the lower cost of electricity compared with diesel and the reduction in mileage in not having to empty as often, it's anticipated the vehicle could provide savings on costs as well as carbon emissions. The new EV vehicle has a compressor function, which means that despite being the same overall size as the other trucks, it can take more food waste before it fills up. This means fewer trips to the food waste reprocessing facility in Wallingford to empty the truck before it can continue its collection round. It also has a lift so that bins can be mechanically lifted and emptied into the waste compartment while the current food trucks are loaded by hand. The vehicle is also quieter than diesel and petrol vehicles. Food waste collected by the waste service is taken to an anaerobic digestion facility in Wallingford, where it's broken down and converted into biogas, providing enough energy to heat 4,800 homes.
The number of public electric vehicle chargers driver had access to in Oxford rose by a fifth last year, new figures show. It comes as the RAC expressed concerns certain communities are missing out across the Thames Valley region, with the figures showing an inconsistent supply of chargers across the UK. Department for Transport figures show there were 181 public electric car chargers in Oxford as of July, up from 149 the year before. It means the number of public chargers has risen by 21% over the last year. The government set a target of installing 300,000 public electric chargers by 2030, meaning around 3,600 chargers must be installed across the UK per month. Of the chargers installed in Oxford, 42 were rapid chargers. Nationally, 65,000 chargers had been installed as of July, a rise of 47% on the year before. It means the government is on track to meet its 2030 target. But the RAC said areas currently poorly served need to be prioritised, with some places having more than 1,000 charges per 100,000 people and others having fewer than 30 per 100,000 people. There were 111 public charges per 100,000 people in Oxford. Meanwhile, just two of the 14 local authorities with the best access were based outside of London, while the capital accounted for nearly a third of the charges nationally. RAC Head of Policy Simon Williams said, "It's extremely positive that electric vehicle chargers continue to be installed at pace in public locations, giving current and prospective EV drivers more confidence that they'll be able to charge up when and where they need to. But there are significant differences when it comes to regional and local accessibility." Mr. Williams added, "Everything is moving in the right direction, but it's still the case that building the charging infrastructure the UK needs is no mean feat." Oxford has lost one in seven ATMs in 3 years, new analysis shows. This mirrors a significant drop in cash machine numbers across the UK. New analysis of Link Data, a network of cash machines, shows there were 121 ATMs open in Oxford as of June. This was a 14% decrease from 141 in June 2021, the earliest available local figures. In Oxford, 101 machines are free to use, while 20 charge a fee. The UK has lost 1 in 10 of its ATMs between June 2021 and June 2024, falling from 54,000 to 48,500. Caroline Abrams, Charity Director at Age UK, said free access to cash is absolutely vital for older people, given many of them do not manage their money online. The decline in ATMs is concerning, although the new regulations recently introduced by the Financial Conduct Authority should protect access for the vast majority of people. FCA rules introduced in September require banks to give more consideration to local communities before they close a branch, and firms must check whether more services are needed before an ATM is switched off. We hope that the government will continue to monitor the situation and we will be able to act if necessary, Ms. Abrams added. As a silver lining for consumers, ATMs which charge a fee are disappearing much faster than those that do not. More than one in five surcharging ATMs closed between 2021 and 2024, compared to 6% of free machines. Nick Quinn, Head of Financial Inclusion at Link, said, "As more people are choosing to pay for things digitally or with contactless payments, it does mean we are using less cash, and as a consequence, we have fewer cash machines." He added the company is working to ensure people can still access cash where and when they need it. Mr. Quinn credits their financial inclusion programme for ensuring 93% of people live within a mile of free access to cash.
A sewage treatment works in South Oxfordshire has been given a £9.7 million revamp to reduce untreated water from being discharged in the river and to meet growing demand. Thames Water says that the upgrade to Benson sewage treatment works will reduce the need for storm overflows during heavy rainfall and produce a higher quality of effluent, untreated water that is discharged into the river. The site near Wallingford has increased its capacity by 29%, from 58 to 75 litres per second. It is part of Thames Water's plan to upgrade 250 of its wastewater sites, including those in Oxford, Whitney, Cholsey and Dorchester, to help manage demand due to population growth and climate change. It comes as the water company has been under fire for sewage spills and for being heavily indebted. MP for Henley and Thames, Freddie Van Miello, councillors representing Benson and Cromarsh Ward and the Thames 21 charity were invited to visit the site. Mr Van Miello said, "I welcome all investment in the constituency to increase capacity to handle sewage and decrease storm discharging. Clearly, far more needs to be happening across Henley and Thames, and I will be working actively with partners to achieve that." District Councillor Andrea Powell said, "It was very interesting and reassuring to see the significant investment made by Thames Water in Benson's sewage treatment works. We know how much local people care about river pollution and the effective treatment of increasing levels of sewage caused by major housing developments in the area."
An Oxfordshire farmer has explained why real Christmas trees are better than fake trees. Anne Gow, who runs Farmer Gow's family farm near Farringdon, has been supplying locally grown natural Christmas trees for more than 30 years. She said, "Our natural Christmas trees are harvested from local sustainable forests because we are keen to support biodiversity and woodland. Real trees provide natural habitats and don't require the carbon emissions it takes to produce fake trees." The Soil Association states that a 2-metre artificial tree has a carbon footprint of around 40 kilograms, more than 10 times that of a real tree that's burned after Christmas. Mrs. Gow said, "Natural Christmas trees are biodegradable and can have zero chemical impact on the earth. Composted trees can be used for lumber, mulch and fertilisation, ready for the following year's crop." She said that when managed correctly, tree farms can rotate harvest through different tree patches to ensure that early successional species have usable habitat. Farmer Gow's recycles trees and encourages customers to do the same. Buyers are always welcome to bring their cut trees back to the farm once the Christmas season is over. They are then used across the farm for conservation and habitat products.
The leader of the Liberal Democrats has told us he was astonished after the Labour government's plans to impose VAT on private schools forced one in Oxfordshire to close. Sir Ed Davey made the comment on a visit to Wantage last Friday, when he was joined by local MP Ollie Glover to launch a campaign to scrap the government's bus fare hike. Sir Ed also spoke about the wider implications of the recent budget, when Chancellor Rachel Reeves confirmed plans to impose a 20% VAT on private schools from January. Carder School, an independent school just outside Banbury, announced this month that it would close in April 2025 due to financial pressures on the school and parents caused by the budget, unless the school finds a buyer. Sir Ed said, "The Liberal Democrats are very worried about this idea from the Labour government and we will be voting against it. It's so poorly thought through. If schools close, that means more money is required to educate those children and young people in state schools. It also means that some of the private schools that could close are specialist schools looking after children with special educational needs and disabilities. I'm quite astonished that the government seems to want to penalise those schools, so it's the wrong decision." The government has predicted that 35,000 pupils will move into UK state schools over time, and a further 2,000 will leave private schools to be educated in schools abroad or at home. Donna Stevens, Chief Executive of the Girls' School Association, called Labour's policy a step backwards for equality, as she said girls' schools improve pupils' life chances and break glass ceilings. A lack of places in all girls' state schools could mean parents who cannot afford higher private school fees as a result of the policy being forced to choose a co-educational school instead, leaders have suggested. Mrs. Stevens warned that the change may lead to the girls' school sector shrinking and choice being eroded. An HM Treasury spokesperson said, "The government has made difficult decisions on tax now to fix the foundations and increase investment in public services and the economy to rebuild Britain and unlock long-term growth. We want to ensure all children have the best chance in life to succeed. Ending tax breaks on private schools will help to raise the revenue needed to break down the barriers of opportunity for children and young people across the country."
A group set up by two 15-year-olds to support military children has received the King's Award for Voluntary Service for 2024. Carterton Community College Service Club was established in 2020 by students Alfie Crabb and Kieran Everett. They saw the need for extra support for students from military families during times when parents are deployed, away from home, or when new students join the school after families are posted to the area. 4 years on, the club is now a key part of the school, providing emotional and well-being support, additional reading and numeracy intervention, personal development opportunities, and a communal space for service students to spend time together. School staff and service student ambassadors volunteer their time to provide support, and the club have influenced the school's wider commitment to service students, who represent nearly a quarter of the school role. Volunteer service student ambassadors have shared their work with other schools and local authorities, extending their influence across the region and as far afield as Scotland. Kieran said, "Our staff and student volunteers have been brilliant, helping the club grow from strength to strength, and continue to provide really important support and opportunities for service children." Alfie added, "We're really proud that Carterton Community College Service Club has been recognised by the King's Award for Voluntary Service. It feels a long time since the club started, and we could not have imagined how much impact it has had." The King's Award for Voluntary Service aims to recognise outstanding work by local volunteer groups to support their communities. It's the highest award a local voluntary group can receive in the UK and is equivalent to an MBE. Created in 2002 to celebrate the Queen's Golden Jubilee, it has been continued following the accession of the King. Recipients are announced annually on November the 14th, the King's birthday, and 2024 marks the second year of the King's Award for Voluntary Service.
There will be a Christmas carol service in Witney next month. Witney Town Council has announced the Mayor's Christmas carol service will take place at St Mary's Church. The event, hosted by the Mayor of Witney, Councillor Owen Collins, will be held on December the 6th at 7 p.m. Attendees can look forward to readings, live music from the Witney Town Band, and performances by the West Oxfordshire Academy of Performing Arts. The service is free, but there will be a collection for the church and the Mayor's chosen charities. A Witney Food Bank donation point will also be available for food and drink contributions to help those in need this winter.
A children's hospice will welcome Chef Raymond Blanc to its Christmas concert at Oxford's Christ Church Cathedral later this month. The concert, in aid of Helen and Douglas House, will take place on Thursday, November the 28th. The Oxford-based charity helps children with life-shortening conditions and their families. The concert will feature performances from Fried's Voices Girls Choir and the Lay Clerks of Christ Church Cathedral. The University of Oxford a cappella group, Out of the Blue, will also perform and debut their 2024 Christmas single. Ben Reddy from Out of the Blue said, "It's such a privilege to be able to support this amazing charity through our music. We are so excited to perform in such a beautiful location and to help spread some festive cheer." There will also be festive readings from families supported by the hospice, as well as from Mr. Blanc and actor Anthony Carr. The concert will take place between 8 and 9:30pm, with doors opening at 7:15pm. Tickets are available from £15 to £50, with proceeds going to Helen House.
A Canadian investor has reportedly bought the Clarendon Centre in Oxford, which is being comprehensively redeveloped. The Crown Estate also tried to buy the arcade, which has been acquired by Bitcoin and gold trader Roy Seabag, according to Estates Gazette. Global Commercial Real Estate Services handled the sale and were looking for offers in excess of $30 million, said reports. They declined to comment. Venda Lothbury Investment Management had owned the shopping centre since it opened in 1985. After the coronavirus pandemic and the reopening of the Westgate Centre had a negative effect on footfall, Lothbury indicated they wanted to diversify and no longer use it exclusively for retail. The company's $200 million redesign of the shopping centre was first announced in 2020. In 2022, Oxford City councillors unanimously granted consent for partial demolition of the centre and a mixed-use scheme comprising research and development laboratories, offices and student accommodation, as well as shops and restaurants. There will be a public square with a pedestrian and cycle access into historic Frewin Court, which has been largely unused in recent years. There will be spill-out spaces for cafes and restaurants, as well as public access to a rooftop with cafes and restaurants. Nottingham-based architects and interior designers Marquini Curran Associates worked on the design. North Bailey House in New Inn Hall Street, the first phase of the development, was completed in December 2023. All the offices have been pre-let to Rise Hydrogen, a leading supplier of the UK's hydrogen and hydrogen infrastructure. Bombay-inspired restaurant group Dishoom signed a 25-year lease for its all-day bar and cafe, Permit Room, at North Bailey House in May. In July, Lothbury sold the North Bailey House to bridal partners for around £21 million, it was reported. The state-of-the-art laboratory space will be developed in partnership with Oxford Science Enterprises, the investment partner of the University of Oxford, and will be a stepping stone of support for university spin-outs and business start-ups. Some critics have described the progress at the site as slow, as the centre has had its doors shut for a year. However, this summer, Alex Hollingsworth, Oxford City Council's Cabinet Member for Business, Culture and an Inclusive Economy, told us, "I'm very much looking forward to it coming to fruition. There will be more employment spaces in the city centre. That's a good thing." The last of three phases at the centre could be complete by 2028 or 2029.
Acclaimed historian Lucy Worsley has shared her funny encounter with an Oxford taxi driver. The author and TV presenter, who studied ancient and modern history at New College, Oxford, was performing at the New Theatre, Oxford, on Sunday. Following her sold-out Agatha Christie tour, she was giving a talk on Jane Austen and took a cab to the theatre. However, she was very amused when the driver mistook her voice for a thespian type. She posted online, "I took a taxi to the theatre today. Taxi driver, are you an actress? Me, no, why? Taxi driver, because you've got a rich, posh voice, maybe like Imelda Staunton." Fans were quick to comment. One said, "I've often thought Imelda Staunton would be lucky to have Lucy Worsley's voice. Dame Worsley has a rice ring to it," another added. During her talk, Ms. Worsley explored the different houses in which Jane Austen lived and stayed during her life. The historian revealed how the author chose to forego having a husband so she could give birth to books rather than babies, and died in Winchester, surrounded by female relatives, including her sister Cassandra, in 1817 at the age of 41.
Oxford's Christmas market is taking over Broad Street in the city centre. Traders and visitors criticised the flat atmosphere and low footfall at last year's festive market in Broad Street. Organisers said the three-week event was hampered by the County Council's refusal to temporarily close a cycle lane that runs through the pedestrianised street. A City Council spokesman said, "The cycle lane is staying exactly as it is, without any change. The event spaces will have a different layout, but in the same footprint as last year. The market will run until January the 5th. This year, Keston Events has taken over the running of the market from LSD Promotions, and the City Council has approved planning permission for 32 craft stalls and 6 food stalls. There is a 2-storey lodge bar, rides and attractions, and a music stage for local performers, plus toilets." The website for the market says, "From the bustling stalls on Broad Street to live music filling the air with holiday cheer, there's something for everyone to enjoy. Savour mouth-watering street food, find the perfect gift, or simply soak in the festive atmosphere. And when you need a break, head over to the cosy Alpine Lodge, our 2-storey bar, when you can warm up with a seasonal drink. Stroll through our festive market on Broad Street, where you'll find unique gifts, artisanal crafts and delicate, delicious seasonal treats. Enjoy traditional carols sung by local choirs, along with a dynamic mix of pop, rock and other genres brought to life by talented singers and musicians from across the country. At the centre of the market, there is a big wheel and a carousel. Shoppers enjoyed a Victorian Christmas market in Broad Street recently, a much smaller event. For 14 years, the Christmas market in Broad Street was run by Nicole Rahimi, but she quit last year when the County Council insisted the cycle lane must remain open. In 2022, a diversion route encouraged cyclists to pass through Corn Market Street and Queen Street instead when the market was on. Ms. Rahimi said last year, "I'm devastated for all the traders, charities and businesses. This marks the end of my business, which existed to put on this festive market every year." In 2022, parking spaces in Broad Street were removed by the County Council and planters and seats were positioned throughout the street. It followed the success of a previous pedestrianised scheme, which was called Broad Meadows. The County Council has been asked to comment.
Here are local sports headlines. In football, Oxford United's 7 players away on international duty have seen their first set of games played during the November window. Only Kieran Brown played the full 90 minutes, while Mark Harris and Greg Lee started for Wales and Jamaica respectively, but were both taken off at half-time. Marcelino Ferdinand and Dane Scarlett got action from the bench, while Idris El Mizuni and Peter Kyoso were unused. Brown played on the left of a back three as Northern Ireland won 2-0 at home to Belarus in a UEFA Nations League clash. Dan Ballard and Dion Charles netted for the hosts, while Brown picked up a booking in the final couple of minutes after he delayed a free kick, with the yellow card meaning the used defender was suspended for last night's trip to Luxembourg. Although Harris only managed 45 minutes for Wales, it was an action-packed first half for the United striker in a Nations League clash away to Turkey. Oxford United women suffered back-to-back defeats with an enthralling 4-2 loss away against Ipswich Town. The Ewes were beaten 2-0 away to #United in a top-of-the-table clash last weekend and lost further ground to top spot with the defeat against Ipswich. United sit third at Southern Premier Division, 4 points adrift of both new leaders Ipswich and second-placed #. Oxford City brushed aside Sporting Calza with a 5-0 victory to ensure progress to the third round of the FA Trophy. Josh Parker and Phil Croker scored in the first half for the hosts at the freshly sponsored M Group Stadium, while Zach McCochran, Jaden Carbon and Tom Scott netted after the break. And in Speedway, Charles Wright has been confirmed as the third rider for Oxford Spires in the 2025 Premiership campaign. Wright was an ever-present this year and enjoyed a positive first season with the Spires, achieving the third highest average on the team. Wright joins Luke Killeen and Roan Tungate as the first three confirmed Spired riders for 2025. I'm really pleased to be back at Oxford for 2025, he said. I had a great time last year with the Spires in their debut year in the Premiership. It's a fantastic club to be at, and I can't wait to get going again in Oxford colours next year. People in Oxfordshire have been issued a warning as new research reveals nearly 8 million drivers were at risk of a fine this year as they were late to get their MOT. The study has found that almost a quarter of MOTs carried out last year took place after the previous service had expired. Almost 1 in 10 MOT tests were more than a month overdue, the research found. Analysis by breakdown provider Green Flag found that 3.6 million vehicles were late for their MOT in the first 6 months of 2024. Further research shows that a third of drivers wrongly believed it is legal to drive without a valid MOT as long as they have a test booked. Driving on UK roads without a valid MOT certificate is illegal, with motorists facing a fine of up to £1,000 if they do. Driving without a valid MOT is only permitted if you are driving into a pre-arranged MOT test or a garage for repairs after a failed MOT. There is no grace period for expired MOTs. A car becomes illegal to drive at midnight on the MOT expiry date. Those caught without a valid MOT can face hefty fines, vehicle impoundment, penalty points, and potentially lose their driving licence if the vehicle is found to be dangerous. As soon as your car hits 3 years old, it will need an MOT before its birthday each year.
Children at a Banbury primary school recently took part in a dance-a-thon for children in need. The pupils from William Morris Primary School, part of the GLF School's Multi-Academy Trust, participated in the event on Friday, November the 15th. They aimed to raise as much money as possible for the charity. Staff and students wore spotty or yellow accessories, including scarves, socks, headbands, ties and pudsey ears to mark the occasion. Head teacher Ali John said, "We ran the school dance-a-thon throughout the day. Breakfast Club started us off with music playing during the club. The day was filled with musical interludes, including during morning drop-off, break time, lunchtime and pick-up time. 2 minute movement breaks were also held during morning and afternoon lessons, encouraging children to dance at their desks. This was the second year the Children in Need Dance-a-thon had taken place. The school hopes to have raised more than £200.
More than 350 rough sleepers were recorded in Oxford over the past year. A new investigation has revealed the figure of people classed as sleeping rough in the city is on, growing from 2 years ago. Figures obtained by advice.co.uk found that Oxford City Council have logged 1,123 counts of rough sleeping in the area since 2021. Rough sleeping is one of the most visible types of homelessness, as it includes sleeping outside or in places that aren't designed for people to live in, including cars, doorways and abandoned buildings. Many rough sleepers are vulnerable and struggle with complex physical and mental issues such as addiction. In 2018, the average age of a rough sleeper at death was just 44 years old for men and 42 years old for women. When support structures that prevent rough sleeping, like emergency accommodation, are unavailable, people can be forced onto the streets. Once someone is forced into homelessness, these problems can become more difficult to resolve. In 2021/22, the number of homeless people sleeping rough counted by Oxford City Council stood at 316. A year later, this number increased to 412, which is the highest number of rough sleepers over the three-year period. The past year has seen a drop in rough sleepers living in Oxford, standing at 395. Due to the rising cost of rent as well as the cost of living crisis pushing more people to seek help, councils are struggling to find and fund temporary accommodation. Riverside, a charity providing hostel accommodation, said there had been no significant investment in hostels in England since 2011, and the number of bed spaces in England had fallen by almost a quarter between 2010 and 2022. Speaking to The Big Issue, John Glenton, the executive director of Riverside, said, "Increased investment in supported housing would provide more spaces to help get more people out of temporary accommodation into a dedicated space where they can receive the support they need. These services provide a route out of homelessness and help to reduce spending on very expensive and often inadequate temporary housing." The latest government statistics show that 358,370 households contacted their local authority for support after being threatened with homelessness or losing their home in 2023 to 24. This is up more than 10% in a year. And of these, 324,990 were assessed as homeless. A Christmas train ride in Oxfordshire has been named as one of the UK's best in the Times Top 15 Festive Rail Experiences for the second year in a row. Charlesey and Wallingford Railway, a volunteer-run tourist train line set up in 1861, runs themed train rides for customers, including the Santa Express in the winter. The heritage organisation wrote on Facebook, "We are incredibly proud to have been included in the Times Top 15 Santa Trains for the second year in a row. This is an incredible recognition of all the volunteers who put in time and effort into the railway throughout the year. The Santa Express experience includes a meet and greet with Father Christmas, entertainment from his elves, and every child gets a present. Before boarding, adults will enjoy a festive drink and mince pie, and children will get a soft drink and sweet treat from the railway's Christmas market. The route is a round trip from Wallingford Station through scenic countryside, which takes about an hour. The railway also runs seasonal events and themed train rides throughout the year, and the busy Christmas period also offers a wine train with a tasting and a New Year's Day mince pie special. Tickets are still available for the Santa Express, which begins running on November 23rd until Christmas. Book on the organisation's website, www.cholsey-wallingford-railway.com.
Unpaid carers in Oxfordshire can now apply for a photo ID card recognising their essential role. The initiative, organised by Carers Oxfordshire and funded by the County Council, aims to simplify carers' responsibilities from collecting medication to alerting emergency services of their role. The ID cards, designed to be the size of a credit card, include a QR code linking the carer's emergency contact and GP information. They're particularly useful in medical settings, enabling carers to support the person they care for during appointments or hospital stays. This can involve access to wards outside visiting hours, involvement in the patient's care, and participation in discussions about the patient's treatment and discharge plans. The cards also help if a carer needs hospitalisation themselves, alerting healthcare professionals that another person may need immediate support, sometimes in a different location. The QR code facilitates swift contact with an alternative support person while the primary carer is treated. The ID cards are a key part of the Oxfordshire All Age Unpaid Carers strategy, which prioritises recognising carers, valuing them and helping them lead fulfilling lives. Councillor Tim Bearder, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care, emphasised the importance of the cards. He said, "Unpaid carers are a crucial part of our health and social care system, and it's only right that we look to support them wherever possible. Providing carers with a card identifying their role in caring for another person can significantly ease a person's path to receiving the help they're entitled to, making everyday challenges less stressful. The ID cards can also be shown to employers and teachers to inform them of an individual's caring responsibilities and when accessing social care support. Juliet Cox, Head of Services for Carers in Oxfordshire, highlighted the role of the cards in providing much-needed support to unpaid carers. She said, "Carer ID cards can help provide unpaid carers with that extra support they're entitled to, often at a time when they need it most. While we have already provided a number of these cards to carers in Oxfordshire, we know there's a significant amount of people who are undertaking a caring role but have not been formally identified. Unpaid carers don't need to feel alone. These carers are doing something incredible and we want them to feel noticed and supported." The ID cards are available for free through Carers Oxfordshire's website.
Anger has been expressed over Oxfordshire County Council's clumsy handling of proposal to reduce street lightings. This comes after the council announced it will defer a decision on proposal to switch streetlights off between 11:30pm and 6am following a large backlash. Entitled Dark Skies, these proposals were set to be discussed in a council meeting. However, ahead of the meeting, Deputy Leader of the Council with responsibility for climate change, environment and future generations, Dr. Pete Sudbury, deferred the decision until more consultation and talks with the police had been carried out. Dr. Sudbury said it was deferred because it did not reflect his views or that of the Cabinet, especially around the need for flexibility of approach. A total of 12 speakers attended the meeting and dozens wrote in. Dr. Sudbury said, "The collected wisdom in these public responses is really valuable in helping us chart a way forward." In the meeting, the council was heavily criticised for a lack of consultation prior to the decision deferral. Dr. Sudbury responded, "It was not a made policy. It was a policy that was coming here to be considered. However, a public document about the proposal states the County Council will not formally consult upon nor seek comments regarding the overall proposal of park night lighting or the composition of the proposed lighting profiles." Labour City and County Councillor Susanna Pressell said, "I'm a great fan of dark skies and very keen to reduce carbon emissions and encourage biodiversity. But you've set this cause back years by the clumsy way you've handled this issue. You need to take people with you." She added, "There are loads of things wrong with the report. For instance, the fact that it doesn't mention women and girls once. The way this has been handled has further eroded public trust in the County Council, just when we should all be trying to rebuild it." In the meeting, Liz Brighouse, leader of the County Labour Group, slammed the proposals, which she said could only have been written by men. She added that a reduction in street lighting cannot be in urban areas where we have to make sure that the lives of women and girls are not affected by policies which they believe puts them in danger. After the meeting, Dr. Sudbury said, "One thing that comes out strikingly is that people talk about how the ideas that were presented would, wouldn't or might work where they live. That reinforces my view that this sort of policy must be applied settlement by settlement to give people something that works for them." An ex-paratrooper from Oxfordshire has acted as military advisor on three of the biggest films of the year. Paul Biddis, who lives near Whitney, spent 24 years in the British Army, ending his career at the parachute school at RAF Bryce Norton. He then became a bodyguard and a private investigator before falling into the film industry when he saw an advertisement for ex-military extras for Monuments Men, which was filmed around Oxfordshire in 2014. "I gave some advice to director George Clooney that during an offensive, soldiers would never drive right up to a burning vehicle because it might be an ambush and then it all took off from there," he said. Most recently, he advised on the fight scenes in Ridley Scott's action epic Gladiator II, sequel to the highly acclaimed Gladiator, which opens in cinemas on November 15th. He said, "With my team of veterans, we trained around 2,000 people over 8 months in Morocco, Malta and the UK. Ridley is good friends with the King of Morocco, so we were very fortunate to have the Moroccan army at my disposal, which was good. They had the soldiers' mentality and the same sense of humour. They reacted to soldiers barking out orders because it was perfect, because conditions were very, very hot, and they all worked incredibly hard. Mr. Biddis carries out a tough selection process first. I make sure I've got the fittest guys," he said. "I don't just put them in a uniform. They've got to earn a place at one of my boot camps. We taught formations, holding the sword and shield, how to march, and understanding how to work as a team of men as Roman soldiers did. We then go to more specialised weaponry like archery, and then we used artillery, the Scorpio, all the way down to using slingshots. I'd do 500 guys at a time, and we'd put the best guys in one platoon, the one that's going to be in front of camera. This year, Mr. Biddis has also advised on the hit Sky TV espionage thriller, The Day of the Jackal, as well as Guy Ritchie's Second World War film, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. The incredible sniper shot through a revolving door in episode one of Day of the Jackal was choreographed by Mr. Biddis, whose expertise was praised by Eddie Redmayne on The Graham Norton Show. He also gave the actor an exercise where he'd have to follow a target without being spotted or tracked down. He said, "My wife Debbie was the target he had to follow in central London. I've done surveillance work, and females are the hardest to follow because they're more threat aware than men," he said, adding, "When she goes into Zara, she just melts and I can't see her."
With a history dating back to 1621, Oxford Botanic Garden is the oldest in the country, and with more than 5,000 different plant species, it's one of the world's best. Its glass houses and walled gardens are home to exotic treasures from around the planet, making the attraction, originally known as the Oxford Physic Garden, an exciting destination, not only for serious botanists, but also for the curious of all ages. Now the Palace of Plants beside the River Charwell has another string to its bow, with the scents of its globally important collection of flora inspiring its own perfume. The scent, called Metaphysic, was created in collaboration with artisanal English perfumier 4160 Tuesdays and inspired by plants grown in the former Physic Garden since the 17th century. It boasts delicate notes of kumquat and bergamot, layers of elegant rose, magnolia and lily flowers, and a warm autumnal woody base of frankincense and amber. Metaphysic is a complex eau de parfum that captures the changing scents of the garden throughout the year, said Sarah Holland of Oxford University Gardens, Libraries and Museums, custodians of one of the greatest concentrations of university collections in the world. It imbues a sense of well-being that comes from connecting with nature in the country's oldest botanic garden, she adds. And we will get a chance to sniff the result when it's launched at the garden's Christmas fair on December the 7th and 8th. The festive event is one of the highlights of the city's seasonal calendar. More than 50 local businesses, creative individuals and community representatives will provide a weekend of shopping, hospitality, entertainment and activities. On offer will be artisan products from ceramics to jewellery, high quality food and drink, live music and theatre performances, and plenty of activities for children to enjoy, all in beautiful surroundings. Live entertainment will come from Oxford bands Hot Crumpets and Horns of Plenty on the Saturday, and jazz vocalist Fleur Stevenson on the Sunday. Whatnot Theatre will present their show Mother Christmas in a magical grotto on both days. The Oxford Botanic Garden shop will be open all weekend, along with pop-up stalls from the Bodleian Library and Ashmolean Museum.
Dirty cells and poor oversight when officers use force. Thames Valley has come under fire from a watchdog that said the force's leadership isn't good enough. inspectors from the Care Quality Commission and the HM Inspectorate of Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Service said they had cause for concern as the force doesn't have enough oversight of custody services to make sure it can protect the safety and well-being of detainees. Custody staff reported that they were overwhelmed by their workload. In one case, a detainee managed to escape while they were waiting to be booked into custody. Two other detainees tried to self-harm while waiting to be booked in. In the report, an inspector found a lack of oversight to ensure that restraint was necessary and proportionate. An inspector wrote, "We found that when detainees were under restraint for long periods, using handcuffs, spit hoods, or leg restraints, custody officers didn't always supervise incidents to make sure the ongoing force was necessary and proportionate. Overall, the government's and oversight of the use of force in custody isn't good enough. This means that Thames Valley Police can't always assure itself or the public that when force is used in custody, it is necessary, justified and proportionate. This hasn't improved enough since our last inspection and forms part of our cause for concern about leadership and accountability. We found there has been little senior leadership focus on improving the standard and quality of custody records. This contributes to our cause of concern about leadership. About 34,000 people were taken into custody by Thames Valley Police over the period 2023 to 2024, with 130 through cells across Berkshire, Oxfordshire and Buckinghamshire. Thames Valley Police has been approached for comment. Thames Valley Police is one of the 43 police forces in England and Wales, and is the largest non-metropolitan force. It covers more than 2,200 square miles in three counties, Buckinghamshire, Berkshire and Oxfordshire. It serves a population of 2.34 million people. The force works closely with Hampshire Constabulary and has had a joint operations unit since 2011. More than 300 people have signed a petition to save a 19th century city centre post office. Susanna Pressel, Oxford City Councillor, launched the campaign after the post office announced it had plans to close 115 directly owned branches, including the St Aldate's branch in the city. The move has been criticised by the leader of Oxford City Council, Susan Brown, and by the Age UK Oxfordshire charity. Mrs Pressel said that the facility offers an essential service for local residents and businesses alike. By Monday, October the 18th, it had gained 340 signatures. In the petition's preamble, it said, "On Wednesday, November the 13th, the Post Office Limited announced that it would be launching a review of the 115 post office branches that it manages directly. One of these branches is our flagship post office on St Aldate's in Oxford City Centre. Our post office is an essential service for local residents and businesses alike, and it has served our community in its current space since 1830. We call on the leadership of Post Office Limited to work with the Union and Oxford City Council to find solutions. We need to secure the future of this crucial community asset, local jobs and good pay for postmasters. Please sign this petition to help save post office services in our city centre." Mrs Pressel, ward councillor for Osney and St Thomas, previously said, "The postal delivery service has been terrible for some years now. If we are in addition going to lose even more of our precious post offices, including the main post office in St Aldate's, some people will be beside themselves with rage. People have been commenting on the online petition to say why they think it should remain open. Among those was Jane Kaplan, who said, "This post office is an essential service for Oxford residents and is the sole post office within reach of the city centre, since so many other branches were closed. It is heavily used, as witness the long queues and waiting times for service. The idea that it's a candidate for closure beggars belief. AI services delivered by computer or mobile phone are no substitute for in-person advice and the solution of users' problems. That it is even being considered reveals a shameful lack of knowledge and care for ordinary people's needs. For more details about the petition, visit change.org/p/save-st-aldates-post-office. A poll revealed Christmas carols are enjoying a resurgence, and it's all thanks to Gen Z, 12 to 27-year-olds, who say the tunes make them nostalgic about school nativity plays. They are also more likely to know the words to classics, such as We Wish You a Merry Christmas and The 12 Days of Christmas, than their older millennial, Gen X and Baby Boomer counterparts. A survey also found Silent Night is the nation's favourite carol, followed by O Come All Ye Faithful and Jingle Bells. A poll of 2,000 people found 85% of us enjoy singing or hearing carols at Christmas. Some 43% said it helped them remember fond memories with their friends and family. And 3 in 10 said carols were their favourite thing about the festive season. 2/3 say the tunes are crucial in creating the perfect festive atmosphere. 52% of Gen X adults, that is, born 1965 to 1980, say November is an acceptable time for carols to be played, but only 1 in 6 boomers, aged 60 and over, feel the same way. The top 20 list is Silent Night, O Come All Ye Faithful, Jingle Bells, We Wish You a Merry Christmas, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, O Holy Night, Away in a Manger, Joy to the World, O Little Town of Bethlehem, Once in Royal David's City, The 12 Days of Christmas, In the Bleak Midwinter, Little Donkey, Ding Dong Merrily on High, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, The Little Drummer Boy, Deck the Halls, We Three Kings, Good King Wenceslas, and The Holly and the Ivy.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help. That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.